You are listening to Deep Peace by Stephen Halperin from his album Inner Peace. I'm very honored that Stephen has agreed to be our special guest tonight. And this is Sound Health Radio on BBS Radio, where the real stuff comes out in the open so that we can all make informed decisions. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for the next hour, and absolutely delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation designed to enlighten and inform you about options for self-health. As I said, our guest tonight is Stephen Halperin. He doesn't say so in his literature. He's likely too modest for that, but I consider him the source for New Age healing music, and we'll be with Stephen in a moment, and I need to make a few announcements. I'll keep them really short. One, I will be appearing in Chicago at the end of the month at the Health Freedom Expo, so if you'd like to have your vocal print done in person or just come and hang out with us for a while, join us. It's June 22nd to the 24th, healthfreedomexpo.com, or you can call our offices or get in touch with us through our email. The speech is Blessed Be the Biomarker. We're going to be joining science and sound healing. We're going to be teaching you how to do and interpret your own vocal print. It's at a new location at the Renaissance Schomburg Hotel. So more information at healthfreedomexpo.com. We've done a few new vocal profiles. We've posted them on the front page of BBS Radio under Vocal Impressions. That's the second section down, I think. We've been asked to do Paris Hilton, so I did that one, but reluctantly. We've been asked to do Jimmy Carter, and I've got that one done. And a series on the presidential debates about who's lying and who's telling the truth about what they intend to do. We'll have those posted the next couple of days. Third announcement, we've been invited back to appear on Coast to Coast again. Thank you for all your support and patience about that. We're still trying to answer all those inquiries. But for every one person who asked about the training, we have like 500 who wanted to be seen as a client. So please, if any of you are thinking about becoming a clinician of sound health practice through vocal profiling, get in touch with us. We desperately need trainers and teachers and practitioners. The phones are still jammed after 5 weeks. There's been thousands, close to 9,000 inquiries we're trying to answer. And we've increased our number of phone lines and doubled our staff. So we know that says you are ready for change and you want options and you're ready to be responsible for your own health. And this is great news because our guest is part of that shift into self-health. Stephen Halperin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Sherry, and congratulations on such an incredible response from coast to coast.
I just think that people are ready. They're just
obviously fed
up, and they want some options, and that's why we went out early before we even thought we were ready. And boy, were we right. You know, we've doubled our phone lines and doubled our staff, and we still can't keep up. But it's been wonderful. You know, there's a few things that got a little weird on us, some people stopping at the front door and demanding to be seen, and we were moving and couldn't do anything about it. But it's great. It's like you said, the people are ready. But you started it all. I consider you to be the father, the godfather, the grandfather, of all New Age healing music and this idea of healing with sound and music. I've listened to your music for years. And then here's others come in. They're just following in your footsteps, and it's like they're like taking your stuff and tweaking a little bit and then calling it theirs. And they just seem to be emulating what you started. Can I start off with a real... I don't know if this is a bad question or good, but do you consider these people are complimenting you by following you? Are they just lazy, so they're taking your stuff and tweaking it? Or do you just think it's time for this magical music, this healing music, to become world known? I know that's a real long and loaded question.
Well, no, it's a great question. And actually the answer is yes, yes, and yes. meaning that when I first started hearing the kind of music that I was hearing. There were a few other people who were starting to hear new kinds of music themselves. There's an incredible musician named Yassos. There's a harpist named Joel Andrews. There were some others. So it wasn't just me. The biggest difference was that, and there was also, of course, Paul Horn, who had that incredible jam session inside the Taj Mahal. The difference was I recognized that this wasn't just something for a few of us to play after hours in a private meditation class, but that there were a lot of other people who were looking for things like that. When I first started playing my music, that was the feedback I got, that, wow, we're looking for music like this. Where can we get it? Do you have, back then it was a tape or an LP? Well, I didn't, and I went to some other record companies and said, hey, we got a lot of people asking for this, and they said, where's the beat? Where's the melody? There's no commercial potential for that. Well, Sherry, I'm an Aries. I'm from New York, and it was pretty much also a matter of seeing a need and filling it. It was also a matter of learning how to do business and deal with this, because this was really what I felt to be my mission, or go out of business and just have to do something else. So it meant that I had to find out what it meant to be a record label. And then I found out, kicking and screaming, that meant I had to learn about business. I had studied all about music, and well, certainly not all about classical music, but improvisation, jazz, inspiration, and dealing with the cross-cultural aspects of healing and music, going back in ancient times, looking what they were dealing with healing sounds. But there was no one doing anything with that. And when I came out with my first record, which was the Chakra Healing record in 1975, I did so because I had no choice. No one else wanted to get me on their label. And at that point, for the next couple of years, pretty much, I had the field to myself. And then there were a lot of, to answer your question, a lot of other people who were saying, you know, we're hearing some music, and we're going to come in because we're also feeling this, that the music or a new vibration was coming through a lot of people. On the other hand, I've also had people who've come up to me and said, to my face, we love what you're doing. We're going to steal it. We hired some guy to copy you, but we made him change a couple notes so you can't sue us. And that was pretty shocking. To my face, and I said, can I have that in writing, please? You know, can I have a clip that you're going to take? And they laughed and they walked away. So there's a little of both. And I've had people, on one hand, you know, one could call it inspiration and influence, and there's another, and there are other aspects, particularly with some of the things that I've been writing, that it's just a matter of rip-off, and there are things that I've seen in my book, including table of contents from my big book, which was called Sound Health in 1985, showing up almost verbatim in someone else's course curriculum and someone else's book. Well, I think that's a little too far to deal with coincidence, but the reality is they wouldn't be stealing something if there wasn't a market for it right now. And I prefer to look at it as if the pie is getting bigger, the field is getting bigger, and we need, you know, obviously there should be business integrity, but the reality is, the bottom line is that more and more people are recognizing that there is this thing called the secret, and it's not just the DVD and the book that people are you know, buying and falling all over themselves about, but the secret is that sound healing works for some of the same reasons, that we are vibratory beings, that sound is a vibration, and that we literally respond and resonate to sound. It's not something you have to be trained for. You don't have to become a learned, intellectually analyzed to death classical musician or music therapist. The thing about sound healing is, you know, with your vocal profiling, it's immediate, it's instantaneous, the body recognizes it, it's a vibrational thing, and that's the secret, and the secret is now out of the closet.
I have 20 questions directed from now.
Okay.
These people who come up to you, they either think this is a great compliment to you, Or there's a little known copyright law that says if somebody warns you that they're going to steal your stuff and you don't stop them, it's okay for them to do it if you don't actively try to stop them.
And the other aspect which they said is, so sue us, we have corporate lawyers, you don't. Meaning that they knew that we have a justice system, or legal system, we don't have a justice system, and they had deeper pockets. And when I was involved in a lawsuit with the only time I licensed my music to a larger record company in 1987, I was pretty much put back into bankruptcy. Even though they were in breach of contract, they did so many different legal maneuvers that even though I won, I lost. And I wasn't in a position to sue these other people, even though I knew I was right. Being right wasn't the main aspect. So we would go on. But coming from New York, there is a little part of my persona that just karmically and otherwise says, how could this be? You know, this isn't right. But we move on.
Well, I think with you being the spearhead of this new genre of music, there's going to be people out there hitting you. And I think in some cases, I've talked to a lot of leaders in the field, and it's planned. They know exactly what's going on, exactly how far they can go. And when you get them to court, finally 10 years later, you know, they've filed bankruptcy and you might get 50 cents for your efforts.
Exactly.
But all the lawyers have gotten buku money. But
yeah.
You know, you get it on both sides. You get people making copies of your CDs and passing them around. On that side, people really don't think that's theft. And I just think we have really trashed the music industry. And it's an insult to the artist that, well, I'm going to make a copy of this and I'm not going to pay you for it. They don't get it that they're taking money out of your pocket.
Exactly. And that's certainly part of what Napster culturally brought into our society and our culture, the whole devaluation of music. The good news is that someone like myself is always or continually tapping into the sources of our inspiration and coming up with new music. And one of the things that no one else can steal is the music that I haven't even brought through yet. And my latest recordings, in fact, it was just about a year ago in the end of July, that on 7/27 last year, I went into the studio to just try out a new bit of recording software on the grand piano at the studio that I rent time at. And this was the high-definition super audio, super sampling bit to see if it really made it, you know, if we could hear a difference. Well, Sherry, I sat down just expecting to do 5 minutes, and the vibration of the room changed. It was filled with light. I went into state. I went into my zone, into that gap between the notes. And for the next 2 hours, I just kept playing pretty much nonstop, and an entire new album came out, which the title was Peace of Mind, which is some of the most subtle and delicate and multidimensional piano I've ever played. I felt like I was levitating, and my hands were moving by themselves. So this is the part of the positive aspect of being involved in this kind of work that keeps me inspired, that keeps me juiced, and balances out all, you know, or at least a lot of the stuff on the business level and the out-of-integrity level, that there are people who are out there and are taken into their own spirituality, whose vibrations are raised, and whom I get a chance to touch, heart to heart and soul to soul, and help others experience some of the same bliss and inner peace that I had when I was recording. So
that's what you mean.
Yeah.
That's what you mean by hearing the music. Is it like out there in the ethers and it just comes in?
I mean that, but also like if I look at that recording session, in fact, and the piece of music that you chose to begin this interview, which was a brilliant piece and it was one of my all-time best pieces, I don't remember playing it. And yet I was the only one in the studio. I listened to the playback on the monitors, and I go, wow, that's great. If you ask me what I did, I don't remember what I did. I don't remember playing most of the things. And the only thing I could tell you in that process, it's not always like I hear the music, but when I'm in the moment of creation, in the very act, it's flowing in, so I hear it as I'm playing it. I don't necessarily hear it before, but when I'm, for instance, at the piano, I'm working with a sustain pedal, I'm listening to very subtle harmonic melodies as I allow notes to blend into each other and chord and voicings to blend, and then I hear melodies. Now, for most people, if you listen as background, you won't hear them. With this high-definition recording, and particularly if you listen carefully and with headphones, you can hear the same sorts of things that I was hearing, and I think that this is either like fourth-dimensional hearing or some other level, because it opens up into such a spiritual place. There is such a feeling of bliss, and it's like we don't just hear it with our ears, we hear it with our body, we hear it with our soul, and there's a recognition. You know, Deepak Chopra and Wayne Dyer talk about getting into the gap. Well, that was totally what was happening for me and is happening for me when I'm in the studio and playing and getting into that zone. That's where my best recordings have happened. That's where my best compositions have happened, when I get myself out of the way and the music comes through. But it also comes through my fingers and hands, because I've practiced and worked so many years to be open to that energetic flow of inspiration. And it's also why folks like me talk about that being a co-creative act. I know, in fact, in concerts and sometimes even recordings, sometimes if I start going, wow, that was a pretty fancy run, the very next moment I'll make a mistake. I'll hit some notes that are definitely not something I want to play, because that's ego. And the key to being a musician working with healing music is you have to get your ego out of your way. You need to come from a place of serving the highest and best in the listener. And Sherry, you know who had who was hip to this long time ago? Edgar Casey. In one of his readings, he talks about the musician's prayer. And I remember the first time I read that about 100 years ago, I was finishing the words as I'm reading it. I mean, in other words, I knew this in my soul, that this is the goal for healing music, to create a vibrational uplift that serves the highest and the best vibrational needs, that brings the listener to a state of inner peace and a higher vibrational coherence. Well, you don't find this in music class 101 or even in most music therapy journals. And I'll tell you where else we didn't hear about it was at the World Sound Healing Conference a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco. There was virtually nothing about healing music, which I found very strange at a sound healing conference. But that's also part of why I'm speaking out more about it. And when I mentioned that at the conference, at the panel that I was part of, there were about, 150 people in the audience, and we got a big standing ovation, because even though they hadn't recognized it when I pointed it out to them, they said, oh, yeah, how come there isn't more about music? And the little one-liner I have with that is, it's pianist envy, P-I-A-N-I-S-T, envy.
Yes.
You know, and it's much harder to teach someone to be a great piano player than to do the training that you teach with vocal profiling. And as you well know, there are people who take one class and think they're vocal profilers. There's so much more to really learning the art and craft of sound healing.
Yeah, the knack of doing it from the inside out. I'd like to read a quote from Larry Dossey about your work, because
okay.
I think it's incredible. And then, are we allowed to hear any of this new music you just did?
Yeah, as you're reading the quote, I'll get this up on my little deck over here.
Larry Dossey is an MD and a wonderful, very genuine person. I love him a lot, and lots of people love him because he's so authentic. But he says about Stephen Halperin's music, Stephen Halperin is a musical magician, a healer with sound. His music has helped millions experience transformative moments that lead to greater wholeness and happiness. Music is one of the most powerful healing forces available to humans, and Halperin wields this medium with immense skill. And I think what you do for me is your music gets inside.
Yes.
And opens a receptive part of me. But that was Mike, not Larry Dossey's. But that's what I love about your music, because the very moment it starts, it's inside you before you realize this is not my ear thing, this is my core.
Wow.
Listening to this music.
Well, I get a chill, as you said. That's a very, very perceptive way of explaining it. Thank you. That feels very right on.
Mm. Well, you're welcome. You can use it.
All right.
Is this album, does it have a name? Can people get it?
It's called Peace of Mind, a title that I've been wanting to use for many, many years and finally got to it. And what we're going to hear, now right now, of course, we're hearing this over my phone line coming through your setup and then out through the internet. So the degradation of the sound quality is significant. Folks, just imagine how much better it's going to sound if you listen to the real CD, or even if you get one of the digital downloads. I think it'll be available any day now from iTunes and some of the other sources. But right now we'll get a sense. And as you listen, one of the things that I recommend is that you not be multitasking right now, that you use your deep listening ears, your full attention. Take a deep breath. You may want to just close your eyes for a moment and just listen. And as you listen, listen also to the space between the notes and to some of the subtle, what I call angelic and celestial overtones. Also feel those notes moving up your spine as the arpeggios move higher and higher. One of the things that you, Sherry, and many of the people will notice is that there's no central beat. So immediately, one of the other things that is still fairly unique about my music is that it's not rigidly rhythmic. I work more with the rhythm of a deep breath. It's basically anchored in yoga, that the psychotechnology of taking a deep breath is where we get to really allow our own human instrument to choose the vibrations, the resonances that it finds most healing. Most music, because it has a steady beat, any external rhythm is going to rhythm and train your heartbeat to the beat of the music, which can be fine, but it also means that it's not your best rhythm. Music like this creates a context where in your most healing resonances and rhythms are allowed to manifest. So it's a self-empowerment music. And there's an aspect that it's like what Ram Dass said many, many years ago, be here now. Well, my music is music, and I've from the very first days, I described it as music of being rather than music of doing. And I had my faculty advisors and critics and reviewers over the years constantly saying, where's the beat? Where's the melody? Rah, 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 rah. And the whole point was, you can't open up the healing dimensions of deep relaxation if you're always programming the listener with a particular beat. So it's because it doesn't have many of the same cultural cues of rhythm and melody and the harmonic progressions that it's allowed to create such a free-floating response in the listener. On one hand, it's the positive side of what happens with chaos theory, that because you can't predict what's going to happen with the music, it is music of the here and now. So instead of like what Ram Dass said is be here now, this is now here, be now. And because you can only relax and heal in the present moment, you can't relax in the future. You have to relax now. You can't relax if you're constantly projecting and anticipating and predicting where the music is going to go, which is what we are culturally conditioned to do when we listen to all music. We know what scales and where notes are supposed to go and that the rhythm is going to continue because our physiology is actually hardwired to respond to rhythm. Music like this takes us out of that place, gets us into another kind of space, and what many people talk about is into the zone, or the gap between the notes, the gap between thoughts. And that's where the healing happens. That's where our connection to source happens.
What I was feeling with this music, have you ever seen a vertical elevator that just has little slots where, say, packages move up one at a time up this little elevator?
Yeah.
I was feeling like, okay, I'm on this part of the elevator, and here's a little group of notes. Is everything okay here? Okay, so stomp that out. I don't need that. And then it went up to the next little elevator. Okay, let's just look around here a little bit. Oh, this is all fine. Let's go to the next little elevator.
Mm.
Oh, get rid of that. I didn't want to go to that place because I'm supposed to keep my mind going here.
Mm-hmm.
On this radio show, but I just fell into it. All this imagery of going higher and higher,
wow,
but staying at one little place for just enough to see if everything there's okay, and then move on.
Mm.
You know, I should give out the numbers where people can call us. I know
oh,
people
great.
Want to talk to you. Toll free 877-876-5227 in the U.S. and in Canada 888-815-9756, the direct line 530-876-3222, and we are monitoring Sound Health at soundhealth.org. And what reminded me of that is somebody sent in an email, and I thought, ooh, I didn't even give out the email address yet. And also at radio@vocalprofiling.com, and the question that comes in I find fascinating. Do you think polyrhythms can also be soothing?
Sure. Well, if not soothing, they could be healing, they could be energizing. You know, I'll tell you something else. One of the great, there are several things. One is that nothing works for everybody. Two is that sometimes things that work for one person may not work for most other people, but if it works for you, God bless you and go for it. Number three, I am someone who has studied African music and has played a lot of polyrhythms in my day. I don't necessarily find that soothing, but particularly if they're really intense, there's a soothingness and a healingness of catharsis. So in other words, if you play it for a while, you get so cleansed and you work out all the stresses, so it could be de-stressing but and maybe soothing in that way. But the larger aspect is that most people, when they say they're getting relaxed, and Sherry, this was one of the fascinating parts of the earliest research I was involved in, is that a lot of the music therapy research has been what they call subjective. You ask somebody how they feel when they listen to a piece of music. Does this music make you stimulated? Does it make you feel relaxed? And it turns out that a lot of people don't know what relaxation feels like. When I started using biofeedback to correlate that with their subjective responses, what we found is that many people were really uptight, and they thought they were relaxed. And this was in 1972 and 73, and it's still true today, although now with yoga and some of the other practices, more people know what it feels like to be relaxed. And I got to tell you, before I started doing yoga, and what was that, like 1967, I don't know that I really knew what it felt like to be relaxed. I was a type A guy from New York and a college student and, you know, it was a, you know, mid-60s, late-60s. Relaxation was not part of my vocabulary. Well, now that we're all older and I found out that I needed it for my own sanity, it for me, when I want to go into a relaxation state, I don't want to wait an hour. You know, it's like the old MTV phrase, I want my relaxation, and I want it now. And that's one of the other big differences with music like this compared to using Mozart or Brahms or some of the classical masters. They were not composing music for relaxation, and a lot of their music doesn't work that well for relaxation, and nor should it. There's a lot of other great reasons to listen to music. The point is, if you're listening and wanting relaxation and healing, because so much of the healing that goes on with our mind and body happens in a relaxation state. Who was the great researcher that really put that on the map was Dr. Herb Benson. The relaxation response research done at Harvard that really said, folks, you know, relaxation is not just kid stuff. It's a very significant physiological, psycho-spiritual set of characteristics and brainwave states and releases of endorphins and the chemical states in the body. We should really be looking at relaxation, but the medical industry and certainly the health industry, and I'm sure, Sherry, you've dealt with this on other programs, right now during the presidential campaign, we're hearing people talk about health care. We saw the revolution attempt in 1993 and 94 to put the national health care and an insurance and a single payer. Did we hear anybody talking about self-health, that what people can do for themselves to keep themselves healthy so they don't need to go to a doctor or buy some little purple pills? No, because there's a whole economic aspect. I go back, you know, being a child of the 60s, I go, hey, I want to take care of my own health. I don't want to have to pay someone else. And in those days, I didn't have the money, so I was really motivated to learn how to do these things for myself. And why aren't we hearing more about that? Well, it's as you know, well, it's the pharmaceutical industry, it's the AMA, the whole beauty of the holistic health, alternative, complementary, integrative medicine revolution is that there are many other ways that we can assist and encourage and support our own health and well-being, and self-health is one of the great ways. And music is one of the most ancient, if not the most ancient, of the healing arts. So why shouldn't we be using it now? Well, it's because people forgot to even think about that.
Well, you're right, and people have just got fed up, but they really didn't think they had options. And I think with the internet, options are just appearing all over. The internet is an incredible way for the people to communicate and not be bound by what somebody wants to feed us on TV or in the print media.
Right, and I'll tell you, you're right, that one of the other things I've been looking at is, and dealing with, and have been, I guess, pretty much all my career, is the whole concept of the fact that classical music is the best, the ultimate artistic achievement. Now, don't get me wrong. I love classical music. The masters, Mozart and Bach and Brahms for me, Chopin and Liszt and Scriabin and some of the other folks, Debussy and Ravel, are great. And some of what they did was great for healing. Most of it was not. But that was music composed for 200 years ago, before the internet, before all the electromagnetic pollution we're dealing with now, before the stresses that we're dealing with now. To me, it made a lot of sense to look for a new form of music to help us come back into balance in this time, in this post-industrial information age. And part of my reason for composing music was first because I need something. I needed something that was effective, enjoyable, easy to use, safe, and legal. And music is that sort of thing, and that's what my music has been doing for people and helping people get into those spaces for themselves.
You talked a while ago about our bodies being hardwired for music and math. I think you said music, but it also includes math because music is math.
Mm-hmm.
And when you consider some of these classics, when you look at this note plus this note is half of that note, is the things that they put together mathematically, it's because we recognize it as being hardwired in us. And this leads to a question that I think is a hoot that just came in. Why, how is one person's noise another person's music? I can't stand to listen to heavy, I think that word is clunky, maddeningly uncoordinated heavy metal sounds. How can people even consider that music and or pleasant in any way? Our music has gone the way of scared monkey chatter.
Yeah. No, it's a great question, and that's one of the principles and statements that I've used over the years. Several things. Number one, we're not even dealing with a definition of music on this program. We haven't even defined healing per se, but the general aspect of healing, meaning to come into a state of wholeness, to operate in a harmony, in a higher level of vibratory rate and frequency, that is part of what healing is. And music, there are many different kinds. Some of the things relate to what one's upbringing is, one's culture, what you're exposed to. When I was coming up, it was said that the reason jazz was not popular is because no one liked it. Well, and then find out that if kids were exposed to jazz at an early age, in the same way that if they're exposed to classical music, other than just rock or hip-hop, they can like all of these kinds of music. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is, depending on what drug you're taking, certain kinds of music goes with certain kind of heavy drugs. Heavy metal goes with heavy drugs. And literally, you hear it different, you feel it differently. Well, that's another aspect. And there's also the lifestyle aspect. If you are a motorcycle rider and riding on a bike with, 1,000 cc's throbbing, underneath you, the kind of music you're going to want is throbbing music. Well, that's different. And there's also a generational thing. It's not just heavy metal, but what we're seeing now with a lot of the techno and the really hyped up nervous system, making more nervous music. Tim Leary said something to me years ago at a conference when I asked him about that, and he said it's generational. The kids are coming up, their nervous systems are entrained and rhythm entrained to the faster vibrations of computers and games. To them, this fast music may not sound as fast as it does to us. But, all that is some possible answers. The bottom line, though, is I can tell you that I don't want to be subjected to someone else's heavy metal. So that if they want to listen to it, I say, fine. Just like if you want to smoke cigarettes, do it in your house. I don't want to smell them. I don't want to hear that music. And that could be that kind of music. It could be, a certain kind of hip-hop. I should also put a brief caveat. There is some great heavy metal out there. There's some great music in all genres. Some of the other key aspects, and I know you're aware of this, Sherry, is the aspect of intention and the fact that music is a carrier wave for consciousness of the performer and the composer. So some of the same sounding music, in fact, it's simple as playing a C major scale. If you are playing that in an angry state of mind, the music will have a different effect than if you're playing it from a place of love. So some of the most dissonant and unhealing music is played from some very angry and unhealing states of being by those musicians. And that's part of what feels so bad for many of us in listening to that other music.
I've not examined heavy metal because I can't stand what
right.
sounds to me like discordance. But is it truly maddeningly uncoordinated as notes? I mean, it sounds that
no,
way to me.
It's at least I think depending you know what we're talking about with some of these things, what's really uncoordinated might be something like punk rock. Some of the heavy metal. The sound has a lot of edge to it, but it's definitely organized. It may be three chords and a mood and people shouting and screaming rather than just singing. But it is a musical genre more than the anti-music of punk, which ideologically came by people who were proud of not knowing how to play their instruments. In heavy metal, the guitar players, the drummers, I mean, people know how to play. So you got to at least give them that, and then it's a matter of you know where you go. And for me, here's another thing, Sherry, which I want to put out to our listeners. Within any given genre, one of the other things that's true is you can't make a blanket statement like all rock and roll is bad, and all rock is this, and all classical is good, et cetera, et cetera, or all new age is good, or et cetera, et cetera. But it's also true that the same piece of music, in classical music, for instance, you can buy five CDs of five different recordings of Mozart's Sonata in D major for two pianos. You may get five different feelings. I know with some of the Pachelbel canon in D major, one of them should really be called Pachelbel's highly caffeinated canon in D major. Another one is Pachelbel's really uptight canon in D major. I put that on, and immediately that particular CD, I feel a tightness in my chest. I notice I'm breathing very shallowly. It feels bad. I get a tightness and a pain in my neck. And I was one of the first people to say, wait a minute, that's due to the music. I was feeling good a minute ago. Most people never even considered that their change of state was a function of the music they're listening to. So when I read, as we do in some of the many books and articles, that if you want such and such response, just listen to Pachelbel's canon in D major, or just listen to Mozart's, you know, whatever. I need you to tell me which performance of Mozart and which particular composition. I've had people try to get, you know, to do the Mozart effect after reading the book of the same name, and instead of getting smarter, they got dumber. And I said, well, which music did you listen to? Oh, I listened to Mozart's Marriage of Figaro. Well, that wasn't the right piece of music to listen to, but they didn't even read the whole article to tell them which piece to use. So, of course, Mozart wasn't writing the Marriage of Figaro to get you relaxed or to get you into a more balanced brain state. He wasn't writing Requiem to give you an uplifting experience. He was dying at that point. So his death vibrations are literally encoded into the music. So when I read other people saying, oh, Mozart is the genius, anything by Mozart will get you smarter and will heal you, well, that's a big problem, Sherry, and that's unfortunately what's gone out there and what people are in not really understanding the full principles, believe is what the Mozart effect or what classical music, what the research says, and that's not what the research says at all.
Well, anytime
Hello?
Hi. Is
somebody
on the line?
Yeah. My name's Tommy.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Tommy.
Hi there. I've been kind of lurking in the background, but it's been so interesting what you were saying, I just couldn't interrupt. I want to thank you, Mr. Halpern, for playing us that sneak preview of this music. It sounds like pure soul music. It's just
Oh, it is, and it's definitely on my website already, StephenHalpern.com, and it should be in stores any day.
Great. I also want to thank you for all the music you've graced us with over the years.
Thank you, Tommy.
It's great. But I've been curious about something that you do to the point that I was going to take a class from a sound production or sound therapy school that claimed that you're on their faculty, so I could learn about this. And that was making a digital recording sound analog. And now, when I contacted this school, I think they're in the San Francisco area.
Sure.
One of the so-called administrators told me that, well, we can do that in our class or in another class. And I don't think it was a class that you were teaching.
No.
I don't know if they were telling me that in a way, like reading between the lines, that maybe you weren't there and that they were just trying to keep me there as a customer or something. I just felt funny.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think you're talking about the Globe Institute, and they
That's
were also
it.
the sponsors of the World Sound Healing Conference in May. I teach one class a semester, and there's a number of other teachers. They have some very interesting faculty and a lot of interesting classes. But I come at, I noticed even at the conference, there is a very kind of, let me put it this way. There are classes on how to do recordings taught by engineers. There are classes like what I teach taught by a musician. And, you know, an engineer...
I'll take the latter class any old day.
Right. I mean, I work with an engineer, and they assist me, but not one that's over there. It's like you're doing the window dressing, but you got to have the soul. And that's, I think, one of the things that from what I've seen with some of the other teachers, there might be a little less soul and a little less heart, and just too much stuck up in the intellect and the mind and the computerized aspect. We need all of it. The bottom line is, as I say, so that's one class that I teach there, and part of that is a function of my own schedule being pretty busy, and I'm happy to assist there at some point. But it sounds like you and I may have something which we could talk about off-air, and you could contact me.
That would be great, because I'm a musician myself, and I just would like to be more in tune with my inner me that's to come out to
Excellent.
Present that more to the public than just being a technically, reproducing something like samples or something like that, So just
right. Well, I could definitely give you some insights, and one of the things that people have always said to me is, wow, your CDs sound so warm, they sound like the old analog recordings,
right.
Except there's no tape hiss. Well, there are several secrets that I have to doing that. And I also learned many years ago in the early days of CD that one of the reasons so many CDs sound so tinny is because the people who are mastering them have hearing damage. They have a high frequency threshold shift. So to compensate, they are cranking up the treble on their own CDs. And that's not necessarily a problem with the digital domain. It's, people error, operator error. So there were definitely some things that I could, talk to you about assist you.
And that means that you really had more input in your final product, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not what we call a control freak, but the story I just mentioned was when I was first getting CDs mastered. I was at that point licensed to a company in New York, and we were using a Grammy award-winning engineer, and I heard what he was doing to my recording, and I said, wait a minute. I was there. I recorded it. I did it live. I know what the music is supposed to sound like. That piano sounds like it hurts my ears. It hurts my chest. That's not what my piano sounds like. And he says, don't tell me. I'm a Grammy-winning engineer. I said, you know what? I'm out of here. Uh-huh. And ever since then, I have controlled, and I have been part of every mastering session, and I'm my own producer, and I work with an engineer, but he and I work together to get the sound to match what I hear in my inner ear. And that's how I have worked as a recording artist, composer, and producer, that the engineers support my vision, but no one else can be inside my head. So it's my job to translate what I hear inside my head onto the final product.
Oh, that's great.
Since
well, thank you.
For moving Tommy away from taking the class with you, do you have... classes that you regularly teach on your own outside of this institute?
Well, unfortunately not yet. When I finish my book, which will be hopefully in September, then I'll be looking at getting some more trainings online. But at least until then, I've also had to curtail a lot of my workshops and travels, so I could focus on some of the other things I need to work on. I've done so much flying over the last 30 years that I'm kind of OD'd on flying 3 or 4 weekends a month, and I'm happy to be shifting that part of my schedule. So I will be having some trainings in the future, but right now it's kind of that in-between time.
Okay, well, I'll have to keep myself sort of informed, or keep in touch somehow.
Absolutely. Well, you can contact me at the website. There's actually on my site, you'll see Ask Dr. Sound at innerpeacemusic.com.
Okay.
And either under my own name, StevenHalperN.com, or innerpeacemusic.com, you can definitely get to me, and that's how a lot of people get to me.
Great. I've got this. Writing it down now.
Great.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you. Good talking to you.
Your schedule, your tour, is on that same site. Where are you going to be in the next few months or so?
I've just had a busy last couple of months. I was at a couple of different expos in New York, and I was at the Edgar Cayce headquarters in Virginia Beach, which was like coming home on some respects. The next couple of months, I will not be anywhere, and then I will be at the second annual Cymatics Conference. That's dealing with cymatics, audible sound frequency therapy, and some of the concepts that underlie the theoretical underpinnings of how sound affects matter in the physical plane. That will be in Atlanta, September 14th to 16th. And then a couple weeks after that, I'll be at the New Mexico Conference on Science and Consciousness on Sound Healing in Santa Fe, and I think that's around November 11th. So
we'll be there together.
Excellent.
We've got a question that just leads into this. How is music different from frequency healing?
A great question. Frequency healing is basically just one. It's not music. It's just straight tone. So in other words, you'll have a tone, whether it's a there is no melodic flow or harmonic in terms of other what we understand as music harmony. There are harmonics of the individual tone, and like with cymatics, there are 5 different frequencies that are used, but the difference is that it's one tone, and the key frequency doesn't change. So that's what a lot of the sound healing technologies are working with, in the same way that if you hit a tuning fork, you get one note. It's a great note, but if you're a piano player, that may get a little boring after a while. In the same way that if you play a crystal bowl, that's a sound healing instrument, it basically produces one tone. It's a beautiful tone, but it's one tone. If you play a Tibetan 7-metal singing bowl, it's basically one tone with harmonics, and there's some good brainwave frequencies in there, but it's not something that is going to suffice in terms of music. I listen to all of these. In my meditation area, I have a crystal bowl. I have a couple of Tibetan singing bowls. And I work with them for maybe a minute and go deeper into the silence. And there are other times I'll listen to music. I'm an equal opportunity user. If it works and it works for me, I will use it. And I'll make up my own variations. Someday I'll do more with the bowl. Someday I'll do more with the music. And it's not. And here's, I guess, the position point on this is what I'm already seeing, Sherry, in the field is that, in fact, even at the Sound Healing Conference, it's our way is better than your way. Our machine is better than your soul-inspired music. and or anyone's music. And that's divisive. We need, I believe, to be inclusive in the same way that the music therapy tradition, which is only about 50 years old or so, 60 years old, is part of the, as I see it, part of the entire field of sound healing. But many of those people now feel that the sound healers are competition, they're financial rivals. Well, again, that's a very limited way of looking at people. We need all the healing we can get, and that's why there's room for all of us.
There's enough people to go around.
Absolutely. And the work that you're doing, I mean, you're proof positive the response that you got after that show is look how hungry people are for that kind of nourishment.
We've got 50 more questions here, but we got to go. We're out of time.
Wow.
When your book comes out, get in touch and we'll have you back on.
Absolutely.
The most interesting questions I see here, I'd really like to answer you to answer sometime. Have you had a past life where you were a composer?
Many of them. And what I mentioned before about visiting the Edgar Cayce headquarters, like coming home, reading Edgar Cayce was how I got opened up to some of my past lives. And what I'm doing in this life very much builds on work I've done in Egypt, in ancient China, and a surprise to me, in ancient India. So we'll talk about that next time.
We have to. There's so many good questions. I'll send them on to you.
Great.
This is Sherry Edwards and Stephen Halperin on Sound Health Radio at BBS Radio. We'll talk to you next week and have Stephen back when his book comes out. Thank you so much for being with us.